We Talk Podcasts is now proudly presented by Geek Nation Tours. The time of the geek is at hand. Geek Nation Tours provides fun and unique vacation packages featuring themes such as the Civil War, Harry Potter, board games and beer, sports geeks, in locations such as Germany, Japan, England, and all over America. Visit geeknationtours.com and get your geek on.
We hope you enjoy your stay. It's good to have you with us, even if it's just for the day. We hope you enjoy your stay. Outside the sun is shining, it seems like heaven ain't far away. It's good to have you with us, even if it's just for the day.
All right, so I'm Keith. I'm the co-host of We Talk Comics. We'll go to my right. Introduce yourself and how you ended up at this table.
My name's Finlu Cullen. I am the illustrator and co-author for Crash and Burn, an ongoing web series that we're turning into a print series. Just for the record, my pronouns are they and them. And I ended up here because I joined Panel One, and they extended the invitation to me. They've been very welcoming.
My name is Nathan Miller, and I came here via my victory on the planet Kolgor, where we slayed the Hoth.
What are you working on, Hoppy?
We gonna do that again too? Okay,
no,
I color futility, and I do other stuff on Where She Walks.
We can do a short. We can do a short intro.
There we go.
My name's Aaron Navratti. I'm self-publishing a project called The Cold Fire about a Norman Crusader and his conflict of principles. And I was invited here via email.
My name is Chloe Smith. I am a comic book enthusiast invited here by the lovely people of We Talk Podcast.
Which one's that?
Yeah, who's the lovely?
Mo and Brett.
Okay, all right.
Burn to Keith. My name's Ben.
Sick.
My name is Ben Rankle. I am a comic book artist writer working with Renegade Arts Entertainment on a graphic novel called Frank. I got here by being given the number 3.
Yes, you did.
My name's Riley Rosmo, and Brett picked me up at my house.
I love the incredibly literal nature of this grouping. That's what so. Some of you have work that's widely distributed. Some of you have work that is available online. How do you deal with the? We're in a whole different world when it comes to the access that your audience has to you. In a way that of course everything's dealing with this, but for example, a comic that's going up a page at a time, you're getting comments a page at a time. How do you deal with the comments that are coming in, both good and bad?
I think it's actually very valuable to be able to have that engagement with fans, especially if you're starting out from a relatively unknown place. Because that individual attention is something I think fans value. And as long as you're able to detach yourself enough that you can engage positively when it's needed, but not feed the trolls, then I think it's ultimately a really positive thing to be able to respond to comments in time and build not just fans, but to build a community around your work.
Yeah, the community building thing was big back in the day. When I did webcomics, it was a huge part of how you were supposed to kind of build yourself as like an entity, especially in the webcomics community, as it was back when I was doing it like 3 decades ago or whatever. But yeah, I found the community thing was like something everybody that like did webcomics mm-hmm. was really big into. It was something you're supposed to work on, cultivate, grow, and that was going to be your base for later on how you were going to put yourself out there and financially support yourself through whatever it was, merchandise associated with your comic, your Patreon or whatever it's called,
Patreon, yeah. That's
that sort of thing.
Definitely where I'm at right now.
Where you're trying to build that audience so
yeah.
that people can help you work on art.
Yeah, and I think that if you have a connection with people, they are so much more likely to want to support that work.
Yeah,
It
kind of becomes about you more than your.
Yeah,
your
they
drawing,
want to see you succeed.
Which I have mixed feelings about, but
I agree. I'm like I actually really like my anonymity in these kind of circles, but that's why I like kind of having this. I mentioned trying to have a balance between engaging positively and not giving too much of yourself as a person into that. Because they don't know you as a person, and that's not really what they're talking about.
Well, no, and it should be about the work. But yeah, I found, like, at least for me, it definitely became about, like, me as a person and whether or not they liked me. And that was whether or not my comic was popular, which is really interesting because that leads into sort of the idea of any sort of status within, like, any kind of fandom or whatever and what the fans or the readers think they get from you as a creator, because they all feel like they own just a little bit of you. And
yeah.
The more they know you, they feel like they deserve something else from you. So it's interesting trying to see some people that I know delineate the idea that what they get is the work. They don't get a little bit of your soul as well. But I don't know. Riley's probably pretty familiar with stuff like that.
Yeah, Riley, you have the big two crosshairs on your back when it comes to social media. You can get away with almost anything from a Boom comic, and no one will ever notice it. But that DC bullet in the corner.
I just try and be kind, and I mean it's become a part of the industry that you have to. I feel like you have to have a persona, and if it was up to me, it would just be the work. That's it. I don't really want to know about other people. I just want their work. I want the work in as pure a way as possible.
But there's definitely comics people on Twitter especially that are personas more than...
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that if I... Because I'm, like, a super sensitive, like, artist, like, my feelings get hurt real easy about my work. So if I was more internet literate and I started like that, I don't think I'd be making comics anymore. Because everybody hated my work for a long time. Like, there's two ways. There's, like, when you make something that's not... super representation on mainstream. You have the detractors that they say you don't know how to draw, you're not making those decisions consciously, everything looks like garbage. And then you have the people that really love you, right? It's that there's like Umberto Ramos is, I think, a good example of like you love him or you hate him. But if I was worried about what the internet said, I'd be out. That'd be it.
Yeah.
That's
so, like, even with Hellblazer Constantine, when you start working on that, and your guys' take on it, like,
everyone hates his guts.
Yeah, you're going to have a shit ton of people on Twitter being like, that's not the Constantine that I know and love. That's not 80s Constantine. What the fuck
yeah, it doesn't
like,
matter what you do.
And they have an ownership of that character
his
that is
jacket's
just
too short.
Insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jacket has to be this long. I'm like, well, actually, in his first appearance, he had a shirt coat.
I call that fansplaining.
Oh, just the aversion to anything different.
Look at the Tolobin version, you dummy. But, I mean, everyone's entitled to their opinion, and they can hate my guts all they want, but...
The entitlement's a bit off-putting, though, from what I've seen of it.
I do Superman.
Yeah.
And people are like, you don't know Superman. I'm like, it's a 12-page story. Who cares? I like Superman.
There's literally thousands of Superman comics out there.
Where does it fit?
It's
continuity?
Okay for one to look
just,
a little different.
Just don't read that one.
Yeah.
So they have an ownership of, like, the comic, the character, and then a lot of them try to take a little bit of you, yeah.
But you need to be present, too. You need to, at the very least, promote your work. Like, you have to use it as a tool to promote your work at the very least. You have to have some kind of presence, I feel like.
Yeah.
So, like, for me, minimal presence, post stuff I like, be positive. I'm not going to hate on other creators. I'm not going to hate on publishers.
It's great when you pipe up on Twitter. It's always a good thing.
Yeah, it's often misspelled.
that doesn't matter. The whole point of Twitter is just to put it out there.
Yeah, right? And can we say for
with
the
Riley, it's like
people that try to correct
you really love this or really love that. Or,
you can't edit you know? Tweets. Come on.
Yeah,
let it go.
I like
we're
people
all typing
who,
with our thumbs while we're like, you know,
tweet a corrected
and
version.
And that's hell with an apostrophe and one L.
Yeah.
They can all go to heel.
Yeah. Hell. That's my life.
Heel blazer.
So, I mean, from the artist side and from the receiver of the art side, how do you separate the art from the artist in that, when you have access to that? Particularly, I mean, we've had a few creators, bigger name creators this year that we found out bad things about. I'm not going to say any names, it's all rumor. So we heard rumors about them. How do you separate the work that they do then?
Don't go on Twitter.
Yep.
No,
it's pretty
serious.
Solid advice.
Like, say, it's a thing that happens all over the place. Like, and famously say, like Roman Polanski, right? I didn't know much about Roman Polanski. I really like Rosemary's Baby. I like lots of his movies. And then you find out about him. Like,
so it's interesting.
It changes how then you interact with the art, right?
Yeah, it is weird, and my opinions have shifted on this because, like, I'm a salt the earth and like murder anybody that's kind of shitty. But I've had to adjust that as far as the approach to the artwork as well. And whether or not something can still say something worthwhile or be worthwhile independent of the shitty scum of a human being that created it.
I'm not even certain there's an answer to that question.
Yeah.
I think it's really individual. For me, I definitely think there's a line. I mean, if I heard someone, petty theft, whatever, you know, there's a certain amount of terrible human being you're allowed to be before I'll disown your work.
Who hasn't knocked over a 7-Eleven, really?
I mean, really, come on.
I'll do it way here.
But I think there's a certain level where you as a consumer don't want to be giving your money to someone.
Yeah, there's that part of it too, right?
You don't want to be supporting them.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of individual. I think it does kind of change how you view the themes they might be discussing in their work.
Yeah, sure.
Because they're coming clearly from a very different place than you assumed they were. So not only are you kind of... you want to disown them, which just also speaks to the entitlement of a consumer, but
yeah.
You don't want to be seen as supporting them socially. But at the same time, I've seen a lot of people kind of flip out over much more minor infractions and insist that they get this kind of social isolation.
We've gone.
I don't think it's fair.
From not doing anything about it to just sort of like full on hate Tumblr culture where like we just they die now. There is no room for coming back from anything.
I think it's very black and white in what is considered a big enough infraction or a big enough misstep to never be able to
as if there was some
that
committee
again.
Out there that like had made up the rules and published them that we're all adhering to.
George Josie and the Pussycats?
Yeah, it was a great film.
With the overlording brainwashing that they're doing. That's what's happening. That's what's happening.
Like just generally
there's not people that's like no one's Josie like and there, no one's in the Pussycats. That's what I mean.
I feel like
that's getting a little.
The solution to me, like the only solution, is to instead of like, and it's just for me, is instead of presenting the negative, if you don't like something, is promote the things that you do like.
Yeah.
And promote the positive always instead of the tearing down. Like the worst is when people tear down other creators. To me, like that that's so like gross.
Yeah.
Instead. Mm-hmm. Be like, I really love this person's work. Like, if there's a person over here and you feel like polar opposite, so find that person.
I like
you don't know
this
who
thing
it is.
Instead.
This thing is the best.
Yeah.
Instead of being like that person's shitty.
Yeah, we got to shift our approach to that sort of.
All love. All
and
love.
I think there's more room for critical consumption, where you say, you know what, the creator who made this is garbage. And I would never talk to them at a party, and you know, I hope that they never have the room to do the horrible things that they've done. But at the same time, their movie was very compelling to me at a formative time in my life or something like that. So I think you can focus on the positive in an individual piece of work while still acknowledging that the creator has flaws or even the work has flaws.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if we ever get to a point where we can do that without having to caveat everything.
Yeah.
Like, I went on Twitter and I said I liked X, but then I also spent 17 hours explaining why I didn't support their choices to, like, murder a village of small children.
Yeah.
Someone said that to me the other day, that they not the small children thing. They had mentioned a work by Arthur C. Clarke, and he said, and you know, I've since found out bad things about Arthur C. Clarke, but it's too late. I already enjoyed the book.
Yeah,
It's interesting, and yet at the same time, part of me is like, we need to be vocal about the things that they've done that are shitty, so that other people are aware or whatever. But I don't know.
I think there is an answer.
I'm somewhere in the middle.
Again, make it positive. Yeah. Instead of pointing out the shitty thing, make something about that. Make something around that. Make. You know, like address it through the medium instead of.
So make a new comic about how that person was shitty?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I like it. No, that's actually a good idea.
That is. That's a just keep making more work kind of.
Yeah. Create more art.
I think it has more value than burning people down.
Mm. Yeah.
I think we're also entering an age, though, where people can no longer get away with garbage privately and have a public, and still have a sort of a spotless public image for years and years and years.
Absolutely.
That you, if your person and your persona don't at least come close to each other, that you're going to have some problems being a public individual, right, subject to public conversation. I mean, people now are being tried very quickly in the court of public opinion, before even having any kind of formal police charges laid.
Yeah.
People are already, so that, and obviously there's all kinds of legal stuff around that, defamation and that sort of thing, but it still speaks to if you're gonna act like an asshole, or commit crimes, you know, you're. It's going to be hard to be a public figure, a public creator of any kind. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Gian Gomeshi was a fantastic broadcaster, like incredibly talented. But look what happened. His entire body of work was erased.
Yeah.
From.
It's going to make the record. Same point. Yeah.
Yeah. Entire and that's because he. He didn't get a handle on his personal life. Yeah.
But his essay still made me cry in the morning.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, he had some conversations.
You mentioned earlier, of like, I've already read that book, and I loved it, but the creator is shit.
Yeah.
You know, those essays still made me cry.
Yeah.
But he's an asshole.
Asshole that made you cry.
There you go.
It is
are you swearing in these things, by the way?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
There's a, I mean, it is a side effect. It is a side effect of this.
5 years later, too late to tell me if
I'm not. you as an individual are a brand.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's
we were
the
talking
kind of
about
circular
privacy.
Part where we started
I don't.
From.
Yeah. I don't really agree.
No,
well,
that we're
I don't
a
think
brand.
I,
you may not want to be.
You don't
want
to be,
but people
it,
are trying to
you
are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, I think even so much that, say, like, Scotty Young, right?
Yeah.
As his Apple. I think people, like, you look at his work and then you perceive that he's going to be a particular thing, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
He did a bunch of kid-friendly stuff. So now he's trying to, like, sort of buck it. Like, he's embracing it, but he's doing Fuck Fairyland, right?
So
is that a comment? Like, he's, you know what I mean? Is it, so you go from Wizard of Oz to that?
And you don't even have to be an active participant in this. People are going to build this
thing around
you. It's like the
artist equivalent of being typecast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, typecast is one thing, but then they're just going to build a who is Nathan Miller without you if they like your work. They're going to fill in all those spaces regardless of whether or not you've got t-shirts with your name on it.
I feel like you might as well have a small hand in it.
Well, you need to have some. Maybe some control.
Even because if you
yeah.
don't,
that would
be
suggest that I
now.
Have some interest in like formulating some sort
say,
of outward.
Yeah,
you know,
say
like,
Adrian,
it's just going to happen independently.
Yeah, just happens. He's doing a jaunty jig right now. You can't
you
see
know,
this.
If you're going to create work, say like Adrian Tomine or like Chris Ware, right?
Sure.
From reading their work, I have a perception of them.
Okay.
So then, if I go to meet them, I'm going to expect that they like slowly shuffle along, right? Or like with Scotty, like yeah, I expect that he's going to be super upbeat and.
Animated and swinging.
I mean,
things.
It kind of is. But
yeah.
If you want to mitigate that in any way, I think you have to have some kind of a presence.
Okay.
Which is a good thing.
Because it's going to happen one way or another, right? So
yeah.
Whether, you know, poor Chris Ware, like that's how I imagine it, is that he just like slowly shuffles the screen around. You know?
It's an interesting segue. Oh, sorry.
Oh,
go ahead.
Okay. You know, I don't think you mentioned how you need to, you feel like you don't want to have to be a part of that.
Yeah.
But well, from where your consumers are coming from, everybody's trying to figure out what their identity is, and if they can grab onto yours, then that just makes, that gives them like a purpose to live, an identity to grab onto and latch onto. And so, you know, we were talking earlier about you feeling like, you know, why do you have to have a piece of my soul? Well, it's because like they don't understand what their soul's made out of, so they're trying to grasp from you. They're grasping aspects here and aspects there, and all of a sudden, you know, they're trying to be like, they're trying to be you. They're trying to be you, right? Like,
yeah,
they,
it's a
they
cult
really,
of personality.
Yeah,
thing. Yeah, and part of that too is why I think they get so vicious once you turn out not to be the person
that they want.
You crush their soul. That's
yeah, and I mean, to look up to someone because of their work and because you want to grow up to do work like them, I don't think it's a bad thing to look for role models in the media that you consume, but I think it's naive to expect them not to be full human beings.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Maybe that's just a journey people go on as they get older or something.
Yeah.
Where you figure out all your.
See, the thing about the internet too is that you don't know. I mean, these kids could be 12, like, consuming your work, and then.
The other interesting thing is the assumptions people make about what you've presented in your work about you, and because it's tough to approach some subjects nowadays because people aren't able to understand the idea of nuance and dealing with something topical that is not necessarily a positive thing. So you might be approaching a situation that has a generally negative context, and because you're representing that in your story, they think that's you. You're that thing, or you believe in that thing, or you support that thing, when really you're trying to speak about that subject in a way. And I've seen that happen a lot, especially with like the giant clusterfuck of humanity that is Twitter.
Stephen King is a great example of that. You expect him to be like this super messed up, creepy dude, but he just has characters that come to him.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing, being able to choose to make people that aren't admirable and don't uphold the values you have so that you can explore that idea through whatever medium you're working in. And as a person that probably would have back in the day knee-jerked at somebody for having that kind of representation, I'm trying to take a different approach to understanding why they've chosen to show that and in the greater context of the work. But that's tough. I think nuance is lost a lot nowadays.
I feel like the internet's super polarizing. I try just to not play that. Is that it doesn't have to be this or that.
So we come back to where, like, you're there so people can follow you on Twitter, but you don't say a whole lot, so you can kind of minimize your impact. And
I just put drawings up.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I like the drawing.
Nice sunny day. Might go for
or
a walk after
me,
I draw.
Right? Yeah. People be like, you're
how dare you ever
learn to do
it's
like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I run into that with Fiona all the time where she's like, we don't post stuff about, like, you know, personal life, at home stuff, like, and then generally, like, she has to pick and choose opinions that she represents, like, very, very carefully, if at all.
Yeah, I don't say anything.
It's weird sometimes from the kind of person that started out being like, I'll just say anything that pops into my mind on Twitter because nobody's reading this shit anyhow, to being like, oh, you actually have to stop and actually choose your words. But I guess that's also a maturity thing. Now that I think of it.
I don't know.
That coincides a lot.
I think everybody likes
like,
to have an online space where they can shit post. And
vent.
Just write crap that either makes no sense.
Maybe we just got to get people to go back to journals or like lockdown live journal, if not a physical one, where you can just like write it, but nobody's ever going to read it.
Yeah. Or just don't choose such a permanent platform.
Yeah.
Snapchat, so it's gone in 24 hours.
Oh, now there's a whole privacy issue scandal with Snapchat. It's
yeah, you can save those if you have the right.
It's actually precisely what I did the past 2 months. I started keeping a journal and very quietly stopped looking at my Twitter newsfeed.
Yeah.
I haven't looked at it since.
I've gotten really bored
with
Twitter.
You're
I've
the king of positivity.
Swung back around
Twitter.
To Facebook, like,
and that's why. That's how I can stay positive, is that I stepped away from the rest of the conversation.
All right.
Yeah.
So if I wanted to be a more productive artist, I will go home.
Draw more.
I will draw more. I will close my Facebook account.
I feel like that's an extreme.
But I don't think it is, because you know what I do? Yeah. Like, I'll click. Yeah. I'm being honest. I'm divulging some information here. But I mean to say is, like, just like minimize the amount of
distraction.
Yeah.
Noise.
I got judgy with creating some, right? What you're talking about.
Yeah.
Why do I have two email addresses, for example? I don't know why. It's just another thing to check.
Yeah. Just route them to the same inbox, dude.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to do that. But I'll talk to you about it. You can help me.
I stab a Hotmail.
So I just found out that you can flatten Illustrator. So let's.
What?
Yeah. My brain just imploded yesterday.
Just let, yeah, you can flatten all your layers.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, to export. Dude, your files must have been gigantic.
I have flatted so many comic books.
I've got a DVD-ROM.
By just
DVD
sitting there
every,
with a brush and flatting every fucking... You know how it
looks. Oh, you're talking about color flatting.
I thought
you were talking about flattening layers.
Oh, you left all your colors open?
Yeah.
Not flatted too?
I didn't lock the layer. Yeah, nothing locked.
You need a hug or something.
I But now I know.
I need you to know that's not efficient.
Thank you.
But hey, you've learned something. I don't know
I've grown.
How this ties into the email part.
Yeah, but educational. So
it does tie into it. Ah, damn it. We talk too much.
We
tangent
about
it too much.
Being productive.
Right.
And how do you
minimize distractions?
I saw an artist who was complaining about how he got behind and he was going to miss his deadline. Sorry to his audience.
Brushpin?
But I follow him on Twitter. I'm like, but you post like 500 tweets a day.
See, now I'm going to get contradictory, whereas like I also feel like harshing on somebody's like Twitter, how much they're posting, it's not that long. 500 tweets is what? Let's break it down into seconds. I can't do math. I'm an artist.
We're all artists.
I have 5,000, over 5,000 tweets.
Like, you can do that as quickly as you have a thought. Like,
yeah.
I don't
yeah,
really
and I mean, a lot of Twitter is bathroom
that.
Break.
A drunk
time,
tweet a
so
lot.
You're not drawing in there anymore.
I'm pooping,
like
and
a
I'm
tweet.
Yeah.
Play Angry Birds, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, this just comes back to discipline from our earlier discussion. It's like those things are all there and they're all good. Like they all are distractions and they all are good excuses for why you're not getting things done. But at the end of the day, it's a discipline choice, right?
Yeah.
Well,
it's
any more distracting than
you can
else.
Find to distract you. Maybe you're just really into cutting carrots or something. And that's like,
yeah,
like,
you do that all day.
I'm going to draw later.
I
right
really have to lay off
carrots.
The cutting the carrots.
Yeah.
Well,
like,
go ahead. I remember hearing a guy called
just
Seth Godin talk about how social media can feel like productive work. Where
I think that's
can
a good
feel
point.
Like, oh, I'm getting my tweets out today,
got
or I'm
likes.
Getting my
three
my
likes,
got
my likes,
baby.
Hey, look at my
likes.
Hey,
well, that's
hey,
a, good, that's a
right.
really good point because it brings us full circle back into that cult of like, you know, building
it
your own brand and
feel,
persona.
Exactly. It feels like work. But it's really just hanging out with your friends on Twitter or whatever. And,
and friends in quotation marks in that case too.
But I do think
that
being able to build, a certain amount of rapport with people who like your work, if you're able to keep enough distance, is valuable.
Yeah, I agree. It's just, it has to be like, for me anyways, I feel that it has to be the kind of nuanced, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't post anything about what me and like my wife do or whatever. You know?
Yeah, well, totally.
Like at all, like our family stuff is just not.
No, that's and.
Yeah, I think engaging about the content is a really good place to start with that. That you know, I mean, at most, be like, I'm going to be at this convention, and maybe have some small talk with some people who are supporting you face to face. But I think social media is engage about the work.
Yeah. Even if somebody wants to talk about like characters or like figure construction or like what tool are you using to draw that?
Yeah,
of course.
Sure.
Right? Like,
yeah,
it's a double edged sword for sure. Like it still seems like a very relevant part of a modern sort of salesmanship.
Going to bed. Too much for the day.
So do you want to have a second non business persona on social media?
No, I just want to be
not
acknowledged.
On social media.
I
that's
really
offline.
Can't manage that. I just
well, yeah. But that's
how many tweets
not,
a day am
that's
I supposed to?
Too much stuff going on.
You can't handle two emails.
I can't. I have a work one too.
Yeah. I think every platform kind of lends itself to a different talk. You know, like Twitter, you're definitely going to be talking about your art. You're definitely going to be talking about business. On Snapchat, you're going to be snapping about your walk.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like how it happens.
Another one?
Another what?
No, I think that's
no one else
different.
Saw the DJ Khaled meme where he gives the another one speech on Snapchat. Okay.
No, that different social media platforms have very different atmospheres. Facebook is like a family dinner that never stops.
I like that. I might use that if that's all right with you.
No, please.
Great.
Yeah, no.
Except that I've muted literally every family member.
Yeah. That's called headphones.
Look, everyone, I had a baby.
The best thing that's ever
happened. One of my close relatives is the most negative person on comics that I know, and I'm on Twitter. So yeah, he's muted.
Yeah. So you have very different conversations, and I think, I mean, the ability to restrict, say, on Facebook, who is there to witness and engage in the conversations you're having there is important. I feel like that's not really a work tool all the time. If it is, it's like, hey, friends and family that I know, I'm going to guilt you into buying my comic because you know me, and if you love me, give me a dollar. But, you know, Twitter is very business-oriented, I've found. It's either, the only Twitter accounts I know are either comedy or business. There's not really a lot of, because you don't have enough room for nuance on Twitter. So opening that up to everyone is a bit much for a personal identity.
I played with having a separate political Twitter, because I get a kick out of American presidential politics. I had it for 2 weeks.
That's fantastic.
And it made me want to hug everyone that I ever talked to in the comics Twitter world, because it was so ridiculously angry all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So anything else? We're going to wrap up here. I don't know what Brett's plan is after this. But thank you all for the discussion. This went an interesting direction.
Thanks for chatting with us, Keith.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm Chris from We Dog Podcasts.
Hi, Chris.
Hi. I know most of you, but we'll go around the table once again and introduce all yourselves, and then I'll throw out a topic, and we'll chat some freaking awesome comic books. Okay. Riley, why don't we start with you? Who the hell are you?
My name's Riley.
And what the hell do you do?
Draw. I draw comics. Good. Wait, this is a third go around here.
Yes, but we have no idea how we're putting these out yet.
I draw.
So this is, remember, just image. Like Marvel. This every comic book's somebody's first comic book.
Okay.
So sell yourself.
My name is Riley Rosmo, and I do covers for the Illuminati at Marvel. That's where I'd like to leave it right now.
Okay.
My name is Ben Rankel. I'm currently chewing a pepperoni stick, and I'm drawing a graphic novel called Frank with Renegade Arts Entertainment. And now I'm swallowing.
You know, you're allowed to show you that you like it. You don't have to gesture. It's an audio podcast.
I didn't want to wreck it.
He was dancing in the last one.
I didn't want to wreck it. No one can see it. Anyway, sorry.
No, please. My name is Aaron Navratti. I'm working on a self-published graphic novel called The Cold Fire, about a Norman Crusader and his conflict of principles.
My name is Nathan Miller. I am currently holding a Sharpie pen. I do the art for Where She Walks, and I color the comic book called Futility. That is all.
The book is passing it on to you.
The baton.
thank you. I'm Finn Lucullen. I am the illustrator and co-creator of a comic called Crash and Burn, which is available online, but we're also going to be selling hard copies.
All right. Riley, let's talk about strippers.
All right.
Okay.
No, we had an awkward conversation. No, I'll start this off like I have the rest of my panels. Growing up, I always thought comic book creators were all millionaires. I don't know where I got this thought, but as I meet some wonderfully talented people, I've discovered this not to be the case. So let's go around how do you define success in the comic book industry, or what is success in the comic book industry? I'd love to hear your opinions on what defines success for you personally. Or
I know that my writer would have a very, very different answer to this, because she's also my marketing team, but I actually find I just want accolades. I want enough people to see my work and find it valuable, and to be able to keep producing it without being homeless, which for me right now means I have a day job, and it may not ever mean that I'm doing comics full time, but That's what I actually find valuable about it and what I would consider my own success.
It's a practical and probably pretty smart approach.
In 2007, I said, in 5 years, I'll be drawing for DC or Marvel. And I
quickly... And the first person to get the right answer to the question today. Thank you very much. Yeah. Done. We're finished.
I just quickly realized that that might not be the goal that I needed. And so, for me, it really became about, A, being able to make comic books, knowing how to do it, which I kind of do now. And then being a part of a nice community of creators and having that camaraderie and that understanding and that, hey, nice drawing, or the support of the community is really nice as well. And in that, feel very comfortable and happy with it so far. But published, I think, is the thing, right?
Published.
Published? Have a book that people
have.
Have
something you can touch.
Yeah.
Hey. Nice drawing.
Thank you. Welcome. I really like your sweater.
Thank you. I just wanted to write and draw my own stories. And just figured that it took me a long time just to realize you just got to do it and just do it.
Yeah.
And just keep practicing writing and drawing your own stories and... writing and drawing it the way, like, and coloring and, you know, laying out panels and doing it all. I wanted to do it all and be responsible for the finished product. And so I guess it's maybe the idea of doing that as much as possible, making the most of my time, just getting that done, and where, how far that goes, I'm not really sure anymore. I mean, probably partly because there's not as much of a fit. Like, you're just asking this question of what's success, and there's no longer a definition anymore. There's it's so spread now, and.
You got a million different goals, which are different than whether you're successful or not, and then a million different things that you consider make you feel successful that aren't necessarily your end goal.
Yeah. Exactly. So, I mean, getting published with a large company would be an excellent
thing.
Call it a feather in your cap. I love
a feather. Yeah. That's a feather. Yeah. Absolutely.
These old idioms.
But am I going to let not accomplishing that stop me from
feeling like you've done what you want?
Well, the pleasure of sitting down and drawing.
I think there's definitely something to be said for having creative control over what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. And as an artist to an artist, you are a tremendous watercolor painter.
Oh,
tremendous!
Oh,
right?
Thank you.
So. Yeah, I don't know.
Sitting, because we, I think, in the world we are continuously told, or that success is this certain divine thing, but how you spend your days is how you spend your lives, and I say that also being someone who struggles with slacking off and prioritizing and getting the bills paid.
Naps are nice.
Naps are great. I love sleep.
Can't say enough good things about naps.
But ultimately, the not necessarily fulfilling the bigger idea of success shouldn't stop you from the day-to-day practice of sitting down and drawing and writing and creating. You know, and just the pleasure of that, because how you spend your time, those are your memories. That's about it. But eventually getting published would be a feather.
For me, it's the same sort of idea. There's a lot of different moving posts and things that I consider successful, but completing something, finishing something and feeling content with the way I put it together. That's my success goal. And it lasts very fleetingly every time I do it. And then, you know, it's either on to the next thing. It was the same sort of thing. I want to get something published. I want to feel like success for me would be feeling like I've done all I can to pursue the idea of drawing comics to its ultimate conclusion. And so that's just an ongoing moving goalpost. So, you know, little things make me feel like I've achieved success. First time you see your name in credits in a real published book is always a good jazzy little feeling. But now it's about creating something that's my own, that I'm doing on my own, and that's the next set of success for me. And then it's going to be doing something better than the thing that I did last time. But yeah, that's it. Little successes.
I think that for me, initially I thought I would just be making comics. Like the first time you'd think that, I guess it's just moving. Yeah, you're right. It's just, it's always the next thing. Because if anytime you make it finite, then once you do it, well then what, right? So maybe it's just drawing. I think just drawing better. Just drawing. Like you said too, it's just I get to draw all the time. I think that's pretty sweet.
That's very sweet. Yeah. You got to keep moving something, or else you're going to stop. Like, I guess at one point you would have had a professional getting paid to do the job, right?
Yeah, I think like the first time I opened up a box of comps.
Yeah.
I thought I'd feel different.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like the first time I opened a box of stuff that was like produced, I was like, "This is going to be it, right?" I mean, like, have you done stuff for magazines, Aaron? You probably have, right?
For which?
Magazines? Just
Yeah. Just some, yeah. It's,
you know,
real.
Like, for Avenue or whatever, like, the first time you do a magazine and you have it in your hands, you're like, that's kind of exciting, right? Like, that would be really exciting.
Yeah, I just
thought
first.
But if only it could be a comic, right?
Yeah.
And then the first time I opened a box of comics, I thought I'd feel like I've arrived at something, that I'd be like, you know? But I opened it and I was like, I could have done this better. So now, like when I get comps in the mail, I rip them open real fast, and then Robin reads one, and I just throw them in a box. I check out how the colors print, maybe. I'm like, oh, the colors looked awesome. That's it. So now it's just about...
It's an interesting progression.
Being able to draw as good as I can.
It's about finding something first that somebody would pay before that happened. And then it became about finding something that was paid that people would see. And then it became about, you know, finding something that I was paid for that people would see that was in some sort of a respected publisher or something that people would know about. And then it became about, how do I push myself with, like, improving the work. And now it's like, I want to do, okay, so I've done something that's 3 pages, 10 pages. Now I need to do something that's longer, proper, so that I feel like I've actually done a real thing. Like, it's not real yet. I got published, but it's not a real publishing.
Yeah.
Oh, it was only one piece for that magazine article. Oh, it was only, you know, a couple pages for that band. Oh, it was only 3 pages for that comic book.
Yeah.
I kind of wonder how much of that is something that we've internalized from how other people are evaluating us.
Yeah.
Because I know that, I mean, if you're a comics creator, there's not a lot you could bring home that would make people think you're, you know, doctor, lawyer caliber. So, I mean, it depends on, you know, what your family's like, or what your circle of friends is like, but when you're, especially if you don't have the art community of other people who are already supporting you, it feels like you have to grasp for the next thing in order to prove you're really doing it. Although I'm totally with you on the process is success itself, like. Both of you guys are kind of touching on.
Yeah, part of it's like what you're physically producing. The other part is like your personal drive to try to improve yourself. And then the other part that you mentioned, I know a number of different like professionally working comic folks that are like, they still go home and see their families and they're like, when are you getting a real job?
Yeah.
That's a pretty recurring story. So there's that weird respect thing. Like, but what are you supposed to do if you do comics to
drop your need for
enough?
Respect at the door?
Yeah.
My dad for a long time, I think he's finally stopped doing it. He kept on asking me when I would have a comic store.
Okay, Dad, those aren't actually a super great...
He's like, in his mind, that's what it was, right?
Yeah, that was
and
your ultimate goal.
Like, I don't know, Ryan draws some kind of comics or whatever. But it wasn't until I did, like, a Superman short. And I'm like, Superman's cool, but it's not, like, my thing, right? But then he's like... My son made this thing, and he could like show it to somebody and be like, it's a Superman.
It's a Superman.
Archie was pretty tangible for the circle around Fiona.
Yeah.
Suddenly, like, people always knew that, like, my partner drew comics, and then, but then when it was Archie and they all had something that they understood about it, they're like, oh, wow, she actually does do that stuff. And...
You weren't lying to me.
Yeah, you actually have a
Zank is an awesome book, but it's a tough sell.
It's not everybody's cup of tea, but everybody's actually been around for like 100 million years. So yeah, so there's people coming up at work and like, oh, now I get it. And I'm like, great.
So, Riley, you mentioned ripping open a box of comps when you get them. Do you not check, like, if it was me and you're an awesome artist, I'd be checking who screwed up my shed in the final.
Yeah, yeah. Check the colors.
Just the colors?
Oh, I don't read them again.
The colors who put the word balloon on?
It hurts my feelings too much. I just look at every page and I'm like, oh.
Yeah, should have done that better, you dummy.
You know, like every bit I just too critical of. So it's, I just check
You've
the
already
colors.
Had to stare at your own art for so long.
Yeah.
And from what I hear, every page you draw,
how long do you spend with a page?
Like, yeah. Oh, I did this wrong.
If it's 10 hours or 8 hours to draw a page, I don't want to see that again for even like 10 minutes. Like,
yeah.
I don't want that around me.
It's nice to hold it and have the moment of, okay, cool, that's good.
But don't open it.
It's there, right? It's
yeah, absolutely. Cool cover.
Yeah.
All right, going forward. Now, I'm finding the majority of my comic book dollar recently has been going towards web comics, independent comics, and like that, rather than the publishers. How big a deal do you think going forward? I know how important they are now, but say 5 years from now, how important do you guys think it'll be to have an actual publisher rather than doing it yourself or a small collective?
Hard to say.
Yeah, publishers, I feel like, are still going to act as some sort of a gatekeeper.
Yeah.
And maybe that's not necessarily a bad thing. Somebody's got to be able to kind of... I don't know what I'm going for there. Like
that endorsement of...
Not even endorsement, but help set a certain bar for like the execution and quality that's required. I mean, I think it's amazing that it's an open field now. People can do their own thing and find their own audience and get support doing that. But there's... I don't know. Maybe I'm going off on a tangent.
I think they're kind of different approaches, so I'm not really sure how that's going, how that relationship between self-publishing and kind of auditioning for a publisher is going to evolve. But I think they'll both survive because they're very different approaches to how.
Well, even publishers have shifted how they approach looking for talent now. Like, they're going on Tumblr, and they're finding all these amazing artists that are doing their own thing, that are posting it online. And then they're hiring them to do work. You know, it's not like that cold send in your portfolio thing as much anymore.
Yeah.
That's how you get work with any publisher, I think. Just make a webcomic.
Yeah, start doing
like,
your own
thing.
That's
the best.
And then they can see that you've done it.
Yeah, and they can see you have the work ethic to finish it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In the old days, you do like a 5-10 page sample.
Yeah.
Well, who cares? I could have spent like 3 years on these 5 pages.
Yeah, yeah. Can you actually do it on an ongoing basis? That shifted. The financial model, well, that depends on sort of your existing built-in following. I mean, you can be Brian K. Vaughan and publish Private Eye and make a killing without a publisher, but you can be anyone else. And,
that's an exception to every rule.
Yeah, you have to write Boss first. but like that works for him. That's going to work for some of these guys and gals and other sorts that have established, you know, themselves. But how are you getting established? Who's helping you build that audience first that's going to follow you off of a publisher and spend money on you?
I think there's two existing models right now, and I don't think the Marvel DC, as long as they own those intellectual properties, are going away. Right?
Yeah,
true.
Where, I don't know what that looks like for publishing in the future, but I feel like if you build your brand at one of the big two, it's harder than to move to a creator-owned model because you're associated with a character, right? Like, if you get your start drawing Spider-Man and you've only drawn Spider-Man, and then you're, like, going to go do a thing about, I don't know, werewolves, right? Your fan base is a superhero fan base, right?
Get kind of let down when they open it up and there's no Spider-Man with your werewolves.
Yeah. But if you go the other way,
yeah,
I feel like there's a longer, like, there's more of a payoff. If people start with you because of what you do, and then you draw Batman, you're bringing over all the people that like you because of you, and you get the people who buy Batman anyways, right?
I don't know. If anything, the online levels the playing field in some way, or at least forces current print publishers to adapt a bit more. change how they're approaching release of comics, like Image doing their digital sales via their website and Comixology and print publishing. That's new. And every year the digital portion of that makes up a little bit larger part of the slice. So it's going to be interesting to see a change. I think some of the publishers will have to evolve and change their approach, and I think others, maybe your Marvels and DCs, are based because they're selling one type of product. Like, they're not selling comics in general. They're selling superhero comics, and they've got a built-in audience for that. So I don't know how much they're going to have to adapt. They have the product that people want.
Like, is the delivery going to change, maybe?
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, they're still just going to do Batman and Spider-Man, and people will still
buy Batman and Spider-Man.
Yeah, exactly. But other publishers, I think, are going to hopefully evolve and change.
Well, it would be interesting to see if, because you're talking about how publishers will find people based on the work they're already doing. It'd be interesting to see in the next couple of years if the kind of culture that comes along with self-distributed, self-published works, which is, I think, a lot more diverse and open to different stories. If that's going to influence the kind of dominant, kind of gate-kept, published world of comics, and
less
open that up a bit more.
Less people seeking to go to Marvel and DC, and more interested in taking their really awesome work to an independent publisher or somebody more well-known for, like, doing, you know, prose books, or just going online and trying to set up their story that way. I mean, people can make muscle, can make money right now, digital stuff, hustling. I mix money and hustle, and it came up with muscle.
I like this.
Stock Walchuk's was recently tired. He's quit Big Two, and he is fully committed to working on just what he's doing now. Right?
Yeah.
And so he's making that same jump.
Yeah.
Very
is
much
he
enjoying
the
freedom. Nope, as far as I know, he's just he's being bloody cryptic about it, but he's basically saying, I'm working on my own thing. I'll tell you what it's about when it's ready.
I bet he's got a publisher in mind now.
You think so?
No? Oh, wow.
So he's like, he's developing his own website.
No comment.
Just Scott's always had such great editorial support from the books he's worked with finding him work. So that's quite the swinging for the fences.
Bold moves. Let's push things forward.
That's awesome. Good for him. Because he's one of those artists that's, like, fantastic and completely flying under the radar comic-wise.
I feel like he emerged, like, finished college, and this is who I am. He's like,
I got my
totally
style
complete,
down, I know my process.
Yeah, complete artist, just like, right away.
Yeah, I love his stuff, and he's flown under the radar, so maybe he just needs to do his own thing and shop it around to a publisher or two.
Of course, his books are...
Downset Fight is the one to pick up.
Yeah.
The other stuff
But if you like mascots fighting each other,
shit.
That is the shit.
Awesome concept.
Downset Fight was fantastic. Yeah, he did the Intrepids. He did Intrepid issue of Batman 66.
Mysterious Strangers. He colored some Batman too. His Batman issues were tight.
His colors are solid.
But Downset Fight was. That is the book.
Yeah, that's the best thing.
That's awesome.
So, Riley, I actually want to know about the issue that Scott worked on with you then on Constantine, on Hellblazer there.
Oh, we just got the schedule. We need to catch up. And so, you know, in Big Two Comics especially, there's like a division of labor to, like, classically, you know, somebody draws it, somebody else inks it, and... So we ended up doing like 2 issues in 6 weeks. So Scott did breakdowns, and it was pretty crazy because we don't draw at all in any similar vein, style, subject matter.
And you guys not only don't draw the same, but you're so far into your own thing too.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just like you draw different. You draw different with, like, completely defined distinctive styles.
So, but he, because I love his layouts. He draws these layouts that are like 3x5, and they're complete. You could almost print them. I think you could print them, though. So they're so tight. Like, they're crazy tight. If you colored them really well, they're good to go. And so we needed somebody to get caught up. And I was like, I know I can ink that.
So did
for
you
sure
go to
I know I can ink that.
And he went to the script, did your layouts for you, chose, like, the frame and stuff like that, and then you went in and did, like, your job on...
So it's all the figures.
For are those out? I want to see those.
Super square, Kowalczyk-y, giant contour. I mean, I blew out all the contour lines and everything.
Yeah.
But the figures are all like super wide, like 4 or 5 heads wide, you know? Like how they're all like,
boom. Yeah.
And then I just took them all and I was just like, like it's super weird.
Which issues were those?
That's going to make great radio.
Just issue 5.
A lot of sound effects. But let us tell you, it was.
Issue 5. Check out issue 5.
Yeah.
And then look at issue 6. And it looks like. The finished product is, like, could you tell?
I mean, I could tell. Like, I could tell what Scott.
Would you have known that Scott? I said Scott's name on it, though.
Yes, yes. I would not. I probably would. I would have said it, and I would have probably said, like, oh, Riley was drunk this month. I don't know about that. But
we're all like. Still telling that this is significantly different than yours.
Totally different.
Yeah, yeah. They are.
Absolutely.
Like,
I would not lay out a
stage
like that.
So it's not just an aesthetic. It's, he's also just completely done his thing as far as storytelling, too.
Absolutely. But the veneer.
Is you.
So, like, the lay, like, just somebody who's just.
So there's just lines and splatters and dark smash
tones and yeah.
Yeah, it's very Riley, but like it's this odd hybrid of the two of them, and so
and his panel structures are pretty rigid, like he's very kind of like
totally by the book,
foreground, midground, background,
yeah,
and everything's not like there's no odd draw border, and it's like it's kind of like this, I don't know, like
sort of borderline. Yeah, his are like we got borders,
yeah.
There's panels.
We did it a couple times on issues 7 and 8.
Damn,
I had a friend help me break down too. It's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I assume that was because you were you must have gotten behind at that point. Yeah.
Plus, DC and Marvel, you start out behind.
Yeah, right.
You never had to have a quick time to get that thing done.
But I mean, I at the same time, it's neat. I like the idea that, well, like the two of you can
like collaboration
ground and do it. You know?
To me, it's
like, personally like what the result was.
Because and then once my. Not mine. He's his own person. Ivan, the guy who colors it, once he does his thing, nobody's going to know, you know? It's like how John and Vita Sr. would just redraw all of it, everybody's heads and faces on the whole thing.
That's right.
Weird. It unifies, like, the brand, right?
Yeah.
It's all splattery and, like, weird.
No, well, and that's
Ivan what colors it, and you're like, well, same colors as the rest of the series.
Yeah.
Oh, it, yeah. Keeps things consistent. It's weird how much the color can do that.
Totally.
Because you got the same tone, the same emotion, in spite of the art shifting around. I'm going to find those and look at those because that sounds super fascinating.
It's pretty neat.
You mean you don't already subscribe to this man's magazine?
I
assumed everybody here got everybody else's.
I don't know if this is true for everybody else, but I've heard from a few people, but the more I get into actually making comics as a regular full-time part of my life, the less I actually read comics.
Yep.
Just don't have a huge
read them differently, though. I don't read them per se now to, like...
I'll pick up trades and volumes, and then I'll look at the art and
I pick it up to learn. Choices.
Yeah,
I pick it up to study now.
There's titles I would never want to read that I've been.
Do you still read
study?
A lot?
Yeah.
No, I feel like I don't have time.
I adore comics. I can't.
I still read Saga. I don't have a. I mean, I love it.
I don't have a.
And. I mean, there's still a few titles. Like, I try to read the stuff that, like, you know, everybody in Calgary does. Like, I try to keep up on Dave and. Friend stuff, but I don't know. There aren't a lot of ones
there's,
that I've gone out of my way to find.
There's
right
something now. Very appropriate about reading Saga with a gun to your head.
She wouldn't mind if I didn't read it. Actually, I don't know if that's true. She likes. She usually sits near me when I'm reading it so that I can give her feedback. Which is just usually a slew of compliments.
Wait, will you say something? If you could. So if Robin criticizes me, she'll walk by, I'll show her a page, and she'll. She's like, eh. I keep going. I'm like, what do you mean, eh? What's an eh page? Is it cool or is it not cool? Well, it's fine. Just fine?
It's fine.
Which part of it is fine? Like, fine, like, 9 out of 10? Or fine, 5 out of 10? Can I print this? Is this printable? Like, I don't know. It's fine. It's eh. That's not the thing.
I've got a pretty, like, business-like approach to it anyhow. So, like... I mean, I don't generally go and criticize her stuff because I know why she's chosen to do things certain ways. So it's like,
I don't know. I don't feel like I'm in a place to criticize her things. I'll tell her something looks a little wonky, like, during the process if she asks. So if she asks me for an opinion on something, I'll give her an honest one.
Yeah.
Like, I just know everything that led up to the work that's in that book, so I'm not going to be like, the shit is this. Because I honestly would have ended up doing the same thing probably anyhow, and not as well, as good. So, but I never really run into anything with her stuff where I'm like, I don't understand why you did this, and it's weird to me.
Oh, but I'm not just raise an eyebrow. I'm so sensitive. If she just like anything, I don't know. Yeah. Like someday she says, "Oh yeah, that page is real cool." I'm like, "What do you mean cool?"
So you're analyzing this day is the exact same as the way she approached responding to that.
I would imagine, especially with you, Riley, who I have never seen without a pen in his hand, that it would be extremely difficult to live with you and give you a critique at the same time of any sort, because you're always dry.
Oh yeah, but. I don't know.
It's comparing same to same.
Do you guys, if everybody at the table, do you work, like, do you have a community of other artists that you work around?
Yeah.
Like, that you, like, bounce stuff off somebody, right? Like, if you're like, does this head look cool, or is this hand okay, right?
Yeah. Oh, totally.
And it doesn't matter if you know all the time or not, right? And if they're just like, it's acceptable, it means you can publish it, or I don't know about that thumb. And then it was sent me into a total whirlwind.
Thumb has ruined my comic, and I have to quit it.
Seriously,
I'm going to rework the entire panel picture. So
yeah.
Yeah. Redraw Photoshop. Or
whatever, right?
Yeah.
There's a bush there now. I don't know.
Do any of you guys have birds flying by? You ask for advice on your artwork that aren't necessarily.
No. just a like a group of artists that sit down regularly and just draw together.
Yeah.
And then you can, like, and from different disciplines.
I generally feel like I know my flaws too, so I don't need somebody else to point them out for me.
Even that can be hard, or if you really want that.
Like, I mean, I'm super hard on myself. Whereas, like, Fiona, more than, like, coming over and telling me to fix something, she'll be, like, more often to come over and be like, that's good enough for what you're doing, move on.
Yeah.
Well, that, and probably having a spouse is a little, there's a little bit more honesty that can be delivered than even just your group of artist friends. Even though, their feedback is always valuable, but there's still, I guess, a barrier of vulnerability around, or how you say it is still very important. Whereas, you know, if it's someone that you live with, that maybe at a certain point you just, the filter's off and it's just like, well, yeah.
They're going to get mad, they're going to channel their hate for you not doing the dishes into this feedback that you're like,
well, no, more just, they're not afraid to just be honest or say,
or give you dirty plates.
Give you some of the feedback that you won't normally expect from any of your friends.
There are definitely people whose opinions I don't actually, and I mean this in the nicest way, respect or want.
Yeah.
I need to be able to believe that the person that's giving me feedback is somebody who understands what they're talking about.
Yes.
So
I ask Steph oftentimes, I'll say, do you believe this drawing?
Yeah.
When you look at it, do you believe this? And if she doesn't believe it, she'll say, no, I don't, because of that nasty long thigh bone.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's enough for me to kind of rejig or move on.
I think that kind of feedback is nice and is needed. I find it's harder to get from people who are mostly your friends and who just want, they love what you do and they love your work. You can say to them, look, I want you to be really honest with me.
Well, like, I think just that's, say I think that's too vague. I think if you're looking for specific feedback, you should specify the feedback you need.
Yeah, totally.
And that's kind of why you pick who you're asking, because some people, like we were saying in other talks, have a writing background and they'll pick up other story, or if it's for art specifically, they're really good with line work or proportion, or they have an eye for one thing over another.
I think you're probably right in that, like, you're also going to keep yourself from getting your own, like, opening yourself to hurting your own feelings if you ask a specific question about that hand.
Yeah. I'm like, I know the hand is bad,
don't talk to me about the hand.
Well, or you can get feedback specifically on that and have them not address the other things that you are not opening up to them to.
Or that something maybe you were proud of and they're like, it's not working for me. Like, I don't want to talk about
it. You might then want to get feedback from someone outside of your circle of friends who maybe someone either in the professional realm or just maybe even as a stranger or just someone you know you have less at stake in terms of a friendship.
Is a marriage less of a stake than a friend?
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is when you don't have a partner to rely upon, and you have to pick from your circle of friends and family.
Choose the people whose respect you.
You have to choose people you know you're good. They will maybe give you a harder answer than the ones where your friends are there to support.
Well, the good adage is if you ask for feedback, expect honest feedback.
And, yeah.
Don't give it unless someone asks.
Be happy with what you get.
Yeah.
I gave Riley my first book of Where She Walks after it was done. We did it. I handed a copy to him. He took a Sharpie and he went through it. And he just made notes
on notes,
and he would scribble this out, why, or move this over here, or add composition here, and just went through the book as far as probably 6 or 7 pages, and just like, get run with that. And that was that, and that's fine. As an artist, thank you. I'm okay with it. I can walk away now.
Exactly.
And you were prepared to actually receive
it. It hurts. It doesn't hurt. It kind of hurts. But what I mean by that is it's
it really hurts.
You're putting it out there, right?
Yes.
You just have to be okay with what you get back because it's going to make you better. Well, as an artist, we all know that. When you put it out there.
I really want to find that in a bin someday.
When you go into chemotherapy,
I'll throw it out. Throw it out into the world.
I mean, like Riley's saying too about being a super sensitive artist too is it's good to have cheerleaders. So you should have people whose opinion you can trust. There's a Sharpie problem. There's not too much chaos. Anyway, to have people whose opinion you can trust to critique your work and to push you, to improve, to challenge you. It's also really important to have people who are like, it's good enough. It's really good.
Yeah.
Stop crying.
Yeah, especially if you can't do that for yourself.
Yeah.
I imagine it would be nice to have some people, but...
I don't think I've ever met a single artist who isn't sensitive about their art, so...
No, you have to be. That's actually the key to getting better. So if you can't be aware of your art and where your shortcomings are, how are you ever going to... know what's better and know what you're working towards and have some taste for the future.
I went up to do the 48-hour comic book, challenge.
How was that?
Fantastic. Thank you. Yeah, we did it in 47 hours, 59 minutes.
Nice.
So was it a world record?
It is a world record. We're just waiting for the verification.
I'm so sad I couldn't go.
I met a guy up there named Kyle Charles, who I spoke about earlier, and he pulled me aside at one point during the thing. He goes, I see you struggling with something. Can I give you feedback about it? And I was like, okay, yeah, just let me get my suspenders and a diaper.
Why do you need suspenders for your diaper?
To hold the diaper up. It's going to be heavy.
It's going to be heavy.
and so essentially, I like that. I like that someone is nice enough to say, it's a nice community, right, where they put you aside and say, this is going to push you forward. I see you struggling.
Yeah,
that's a nice.
His approach really was, "Are you open to this?"
Yeah, are you okay with it?
I think it's like carpet bomb that on people. They're just gonna hate you.
Yeah,
and they're not gonna even take the feedback.
And they're not gonna take anything.
Yeah,
I don't think.
I actually took notes because of his feedback because it was so nice.
Yeah.
You know?
Now we're gonna have to call this end because we're running out of power and my timekeeper's doing the pee pee dance over there. So why don't we just go around the table one time and hawk your shit? How can people give you money?
cb-comic.com. We sell ebooks. We'll be having hard copies in the new year.
You can just email it to me at namiller@shaw.ca. Where She Walks is available for free to read online at whereshewalks.ca. And come check that out. Thank you.
Alpha Comics.
I guess we have it at Alpha Comics, another dimension. Phoenix in Inglewood. And I think on 17th Ave, too.
Of course, that's all in Calgary.
Beautiful city, Calgary, Alberta.
Do you have an international audience?
TheColdFire.com. You can buy a digital edition, PDF download, and I hope to have a physical copy for purchase, print on demand, in the new year.
I don't really need your money right now, but
I need your money.
I need it, yeah.
But toward the end of 2017, when my book Frank comes out, try to buy that, or you know, ask your local comic shop to order it, or whatever.
There'll be a form.
Yeah.
And sorry, did you say that was from Top Shop or?
No, it's coming out through Renegade Arts.
Renegade
Arts, a great local publisher.
You can order my books at Image Comics. Or from DC. Or.
But buy the Image Comics one. Riley gets more money that way.
It's true.
And that's called Rasputin?
Rasputin, Cowboy Age Viking, Proof, Green Wake. There's some more.
You're speaking to the prolific Riley Rosmo.
He's got books on books on books.
Books. Alrighty.
Books. Ooh. I got that. I got
this is the book about a book. Thanks, and it's like
and 1% power.
Going up on the We Talk podcast website, and you're going to end up in three different groups, different people, and chance to talk to different people, but really, everybody's going to run theirs a little bit differently. I really just want to kind of get an idea. I just want to pick your guys' brains on some things, some opinions, creatively or in the business or whatever it is that's on your minds. And then, you know, I have a few topics, but we'll only get to those if you guys are boring. So there is that chance, but
it's good that you.
But
have
we
that.
Will go around the room and start with everybody introducing themselves, and you should do it first because likely after that everybody will know how to properly do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My name's Finn McCullen. I'm a comics artist, and I use gender neutral pronouns they them.
And are you sick of explaining that yet?
I sure am. I was sick after the first time.
Someday though.
There's Brett. That screws it up. All right.
My name is Nathan Miller, and I make comics as well. And what else am I supposed to say?
Well, what's the comic?
Oh, I color Futility, and I do more on Where She Walks.
There she goes.
Yeah, that's me.
My name's Aaron Vratti. I am a, I guess, writer and illustrator. I'm self-publishing a medieval epic called The Cold Fire. It's about a Norman crusader and his conflict of principles.
I'm not really here.
You're not really here, Brett? Okay.
My name is Ben Rankle. I am a comic book artist and now writer, apparently. I am doing an OGN with Renegade Arts called Frank. It's a historical fiction crime drama set in the natural disaster of 1903, Turtle Mountain. So I'm pretty jazzed to be working on that.
And here's the superstar.
My name's Riley.
Yeah, Riley.
I draw Hellblazer right now.
There you go.
Nice.
Draws the hell out of it.
He draws the hell out of Hellblazer. He really does.
Kind of it.
Oh, sorry.
I didn't mention what I was working on. I'm working on a comic called Crash and Burn. It's a queer space opera, basically.
That sounds awesome.
Nice. Okay. All right. Excellent. Ben, Frank.
Yeah.
Tell me about it, because I've 4 years ago, you came to the first one of these, and it was just like, you know, four or five people.
Yeah.
And I've been watching you. I've been waiting. I knew something good was going to come.
It was going to happen.
So how did it come together?
I'll try to keep it brief. But basically, I mean, I've known Alexander for a little while, just from like the con scene and stuff like that, especially Calgary. And just friendly. And then 6 or 7 months ago, he got a hold of me to chat about some potential stuff that we want to do together. Asked me to throw a few ideas at him and wanted to see if I was into doing anything about Canadian history and sort of Canadian stories. And that's one of my passions is I've always really wanted to do stories set in Canada about Canadians. And Frank is just one of those stories. If you're kind of an Alberta kid, you grew up, you know, knowing a little bit about. So it seemed like a really cool. Yeah. Or if you're a fan of the Rural Alberta Advantage, they've got a great song on it as well. But yeah, that was one of the ideas I pitched to him. We finished that conversation, didn't chat for a few months, and then in October he called me up and we chatted about it, and he's like, we're gonna do it. And I said, great, I'm excited to draw. Here's a couple people that I think should write. And he's like, no, you're gonna write it. And I was like,
really? So what you want? And he's like, yeah, if it sucks, we'll just get somebody else. So yeah, and then suddenly I have a book due in a year and a half that I'm writing and drawing.
Oh, but Alex is, you know, he's an excellent editor.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's one of the things is if you're going to be starting this process, I mean, you're self-publishing, Aaron.
Yeah.
And you're, I guess you're self-publishing as well.
Yeah.
And so, but I mean, you're having a good, or do you guys have somebody you guys kind of trust that you're talking to that are helping you with it? Because I know if you're not, you didn't know that you were a writer. But I think Alex probably sees it in you.
Yeah. As an artist, you're a storyteller already. So yeah. I don't feel like, and I did web comics for a significant amount of time. So I did a bit of writing, but I'm not a published, you know, professional writer. Yeah. So that's, I don't know. It's a weird place. I feel confident, but I'm also, you know, it's definitely a chance to cock it all up. But like you said, having somebody that is a confident editor with the experience like Alexander is very helpful. He's already been very helpful in getting me to kind of solidify certain ideas and aspects, and just by asking good questions too, I've kind of made decisions about what I'm doing. So yeah, I'm really excited to do this whole process. Knock out the first real, you know, professional work of my career.
So how about the role of an editor then for the rest of you? What do you, I mean, obviously you're working, Nate, you work
with, kind of a built-in editor.
She's a built-in editor. She's bossy pants.
Who is what we like to.
That's fair.
To talk about Aaron. Yeah, not this Aaron. Yeah, no. your sister, Aaron.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Editor is probably the one piece. Editor is the big piece, at least in the creation process, that I would say is missing in self-publishing. I have previous editors that I've worked with on smaller projects that I run my stuff by and say, hey, what do you think? Or is there any glaring, like, any glaring mistakes or things be changing? But it's nice to have the freedom to sort of go where you feel like you want to go. But it's also important to have another pair of eyes or, you know, several pairs of eyes to just see it from a different vantage point.
Yeah, it can be really hard to know that you're getting across what you want to get across.
Yeah.
And especially if you're working self-publishing with a small team, like Crash and Burn is me and a writer, and that's it. So between the two of us, I think we try to check our own work, but there's a lot that you can't really catch because you already know everything. So I don't know. You can kind of ask friends and family if you're really unsure if an idea is getting across properly. But I agree, it's a huge editor would be a great boon.
It's something you'd actually be looking for. That,
yeah,
yeah.
More often it happens with peers.
Yeah.
For me,
I was going to say peer review. Like, yeah. We've got some good writers around here with the experience, like from our like little group of cavalry comic enthusiasts, and you know, like people like Jason would be a good one for you guys to maybe get to know and see if he'd be, and he will be willing to look over your work.
Yeah.
But Riley, you've had, I mean, you're working now for DC, and you've also Image, which is essentially self-publishing. So, I mean, how about you for the role of an editor? What do you think? Is it a different experience? Or when you're working, is it completely, do you prefer one? Or
It depends on the editor. Like, a good editor makes it better than a bad art director or editor
makes it worse.
Should be working on it. Right? Like, I feel like a good editor, like, will be like, well, why does this happen in the narrative? Like, why in the murder mystery does this happen? And then you respond to that, right? Or they'll read it over, and they just, like, find the holes and close the holes.
And answering those questions lets you fill in those places, yeah.
Right, like a bad editor, say, like, on historically on some, even, like, covers when I've done covers, right?
So he's somebody that would have had a particular interest in how that stuff looked. And
he's a painter, right? And he's a painter, so he gave me way more notes than any of the editorial did. So editorial was great. Like it just depends on the project. Whereas on Image stuff, you have to self-edit.
Did you have any editors on any of the Image stuff that you worked on?
So,
because it's up to you guys to choose.
You can hire an editor. Because at Image, like, Eric just, I mean, he reads everything quick, but it's not.
No, he's not an editor unless you want to, like, pay him to be one.
Yeah, or if you put something crazy in there.
Yeah.
It's a great level of trust.
But even then, he's pretty, like.
Oh, no, yeah, I've got stories from Fiona about stuff that they've chosen to do, and Eric will be like, are you guys sure you want to do that? And they'll be like, yes, we do.
Yeah, like, you get, like, a note.
The hardcover, he's like, guys.
Yeah.
The recipe. But,
yeah. Doubling down on that.
On, like, Rasputin and all the stuff that we owned. It's mostly you share it with somebody that you care about.
Yeah.
And if it's somebody, usually I show it to, like, to Robin, and she reads it.
Mm-hmm.
And if she doesn't get it, that's, like, a layup information I take away. And then I show it to a peer. Because sometimes, like, Robin doesn't read a ton of comics, so there'll be, like, nuances in the medium that if she doesn't totally get it, I'm like, oh, it's okay, right? But the broad strokes, as long as she gets it, like a person who's not deeply involved in it, if they don't get it, then there's a storytelling problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's one of the advantages of peer review in general, is that you get a lot of different perspectives. And there's some people whose advice you take with a grain of salt in different categories. Like you're saying, some people, if they don't get part of the plot, you're really worried because that's something you know they pick up on, or they're really familiar with the medium. And then other people, if they're like, I don't really understand this panel, you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
Do you think the editor works more closely with the artist or with the writer? Is it kind of the same, equal?
Depends on their skill set, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have a huge amount of experience with this, but the notes that I've seen people get back, it just depends on whether the editor focuses on the artwork or on the script ahead of time. I'm trying to think of anybody off the top of my head that I know is like an artist editor. Maybe Ali?
Chiarello.
He's Scott Ali.
I don't know
what
Ali is.
Yeah. But Chiarello, I can't remember which one. Though. Maybe it was Peterson. There's one that Fiona always said was like just great, gave her great feedback and stuff, but Chiarello is one of those.
Yeah, because he was a painter and he did covers and stuff. So when he says something, it means more than some editors on the cover.
Respect,
like,
you can literally respect an editor more. Like, even ahead of time, you can respect their opinion based on their own work.
Yeah, I think there's editors that are able to give you worthwhile feedback regardless of whether they're an artist or not, but I think it would behoove most, and this is my outsider's opinion, I think it would be a really great idea for comic book industry editors to be pretty proficient in understanding both. But a lot of them are, I guess, they understand comics as a medium, if not writing slash art specifically.
Historically, though, there used to be more, there was more editors that came from the visual and read, like Jim Caparo and Joe Orlando. Chiarello is the only guy who I can think of. Off the top of my head, that was an artist and not from a writing background, which is pretty interesting because it's a visual medium, right? Yeah. That the whole thing is. Oh, Joe Quesada.
Oh, yes. There you go. So now. That's actually.
What's it like to have to work it out if there's something in the script that you think should go a different way than what the writer has presented to you? And especially if you don't have an editor, how do you approach that?
That's an interesting. Sometimes an artist, I think you try and find easy ways around things that you see in front of you. So I think sometimes it's good to not try and find ways around the stuff.
Trick them.
You know what I mean?
You're saying like approach what they're doing, even though it wouldn't be the choice you'd make.
Yeah, and see what it looks like, even in layout format. That's what I try and do. Doesn't always work.
I was gonna say fisticuffs, but
but I'm lucky. I'll just call Aaron or call Rick and just say, "Here's my problem."
Yeah,
and just chat it out.
And if you guys have a good relationship, that should work that way. And if you're in a really good place, you have somebody that's going to just say, you do what you do because I know you do it well. And if you're making a different choice than what you see, I trust that you're doing that for good reasons.
Yeah, and just maybe let me know what it is, or provide a little bit of a rationale as to why you want to do it that way.
Yeah.
At least if you can do that, that's enough for a writer, I find.
And so Jason and I worked on something together, and we went back and forth on one panel that probably wasn't that important.
Yeah.
For a couple of days.
Days!
I mean, we both had day jobs at the time. So, you sent a few emails back and forth, but it was just like, eventually I just did it his way.
I think it's important to keep in mind that both the writer and the artist are trying to tell the story in the best way it can be told. So if you're really stuck going back and forth on a series, like a page, how the panels progress, or whether or not there's certain dialogue, or how that's presented, it's it's easy not to actually fight with them because you know you both have the same goal.
Yeah.
So those discussions usually go pretty well, I find.
Yeah.
And you've been working how long? What's the name of your project again, Aaron?
The Gold Fire.
And how long have you been working on it for now? Cold or gold?
Cold.
That makes more sense.
Cold Fire. It's like 8 years. It's followed my process of figuring out how to make comics.
Yeah.
Basically. I started with some smaller projects, like short stories. The project before this one was it was for McGraw-Hill Ryerson. It was an educational piece about the history of the Grey Cup.
Oh yeah.
Interesting. So, and then I did some advertising, like promoting power-assisted bicycles with zombies.
Thing. Did you do that for an agency out of Vancouver?
No, it was directly with McGraw-Hill.
Okay.
Yeah, it was just it was just an 8-page kind of thing.
I saw something like that, and I'm just trying to figure out if it was yours or not.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But
yeah.
What are the odds that it's somebody else's?
Well, a friend of mine sent me like a history of a Grey Cup comic thing that she had gotten put together as like the representative for somebody else, like through her agency. So maybe it was a different project, but sorry. I didn't
know. No, that's okay. And I guess it might be that I have chosen to practice the writing and the art at the same time. All these projects, it was, yeah, I'll write it too, totally. Maybe to avoid the conflict of, oh, I don't like what you've written. But also because I can sit down and lay out, like when I start a comic, I'll lay out the panels and the writing and I can just look at it and then move stuff around. And like make changes, well, kind of on the fly as I'm going to say, hey, well, maybe if I made this panel bigger or change this right, this dialogue or this scene just isn't working, so I'm going to switch.
Phoebe, as an artist, and every one of you as an artist, some of you are writing as well. But can you be too much of a perfectionist as an artist?
Yeah. Comics will beat that out of you pretty quick, I think.
Yeah?
Or you won't, and you won't produce, no. Which is...
You can't? Yeah. You don't think so? Riley disagrees?
Yeah.
No, you
agree. It's totally handcuffed.
It'll destroy you. Like,
it'll destroy you.
You can go like Josh Middleton, Pearson, who else? Art Adams. Like, if Art Adams could just relax a little bit, how much could he produce?
Yeah.
The second volume of Pretty Dead we took like a year and a half or something to come out, because I don't know if that's why or not, but like it's gorgeous. It seems like everything she's agonizing over, right?
Yeah.
Mm.
You come at it from the commercial side though, like where like you're kind of your monthly comics, which is like if you don't have something
really smart,
you don't have something done, you can't look at it and get better the next time.
You have a lot of prolific. You have a lot. You're very prolific, and I've never seen you not drawing. And maybe that's why.
Like,
I've never been anywhere where I didn't see Riley drawing, no matter what he's doing while he's doing it. But, and you're not always drawing. Sometimes you're just practicing. It seems doodling or whatever.
Scratch page. It's always the next thing to me, though. But you have two. I think there's two sort of ways of thinking of it. Either you go like, say, like Eric Larson, just makes more shit.
Yeah.
Just makes more shit. Or you do the one thing like Brian Bullen, where you make sure that one hand. You spend a month on a hand.
Yeah.
He zooms in to like.
There's a media.
That's what's on the screen is that big, so he can make sure that like the hatchet on the fingers is right.
Whoa.
And he's gotten worse as time's progressed, right?
Mm.
So I'll sweat it on a cover, agonize on the cover because everyone sees that.
Dude, they're staring at it for a while. It's selling a book.
It
doesn't matter as long as you understand that the shape is like.
I read a book recently where I got through the whole thing.
And that's fine, right?
You're like, communicating the point of that panel. I've had
there's going to be 10,000 more panels after this one, so don't sweat it on every single one.
The limitations are I already don't draw as good as I want to up here.
That's the limit.
Yeah, which is also the driver to keep you going and getting better, right? Because as soon as you achieve... unless you're the kind of person that keeps pushing
what it looks like in your
exactly.
head.
Exactly.
That'd be cool.
That keeps driving you.
Is that
keeps
possible?
You. But it slows me down. No, I don't.
Maybe not.
Have you ever met someone who doesn't just immediately escalate?
That's not to say you can't be content with what you've done, but I don't know.
Every comic book artist I've met, Riley, met a fellow last week named Kyle Charles, who works on Roche Limit, the clandestine book, and the feedback is always,
settle down, just draw, don't overworry it, just get it done, put it out, move on to the next thing, and keep moving on.
I've never heard anything different than
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
it's the same thing of writer or artist. I mean, I'm name dropping, but I was at dinner with Robert Venditti, and he said to me, if you can't, you know, he's Green Lantern and Exo Manowar, and he said, you can't make your monthly deadline, you're not worth shit in this business.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, yeah. And so, Nick, you got a year and a half. How many pages is Frank?
Probably 100-ish.
And you got a year and a half to do it.
Yeah, so my schedule that I just sent to Alexander is starting about May-ish. I'm doing 2 pages a week because I'm keeping my day job.
Yeah, you have to, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's not as ambitious as some people would go. If it was full-time, I'd be aiming for at least 5 a week, mm-hmm. 1 a day. But mm-hmm. yeah, two a week is doable, but that's going to be pencils, inks, and color.
Excuse me. That would illustrate, again, the benefit of an editor.
Yeah.
Having someone with, a bamboo stick waiting at the other end.
Is that what you need some after 8 years working on it? You need somebody? You need somebody who's going to say to you, no, this is it. You're going to get this done by here. You need somebody to do that for
you? That's the hard part because, like you say, the day job gets...
It's a good excuse to come home and not work on things that you want to do.
Well, that's just, you have all these other priorities.
Not the end excuse is good, but I mean, like, that's a very convenient one to be like, I just did 9 hours at my grueling, you know, real job.
Well, and what's the, like...
But it's bullshit at the end of the day.
I think there's a fire or there's not.
Yeah.
Like, you have to do it or you don't. Like, I've never had a choice.
Is it an art problem or is it an organization problem?
I get to work all day long. And then just come home and draw more.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to do that, right?
No, it's not. Yeah.
But I don't have I know it sounds weird, but it's just in my life I've not had a choice. It's just something I have to do. Whether or not I work 6 hours or I'm busy or not, I still, that's what I do.
I haven't been able to quit it for a decade either. In some form or another, I've been trying to do something. Where is it? There's a thing I wanted to say. I thought it was really good. Now it's gone.
I just got the warning from Brett here that we have 2 minutes left in this session. So
we're at 20, so you have
5 minutes left. Okay.
I guess there's, there's the other extreme, just to go to the different extreme, the other extreme of the person who gets 4 hours of sleep at night.
Yeah.
Who is trying to, do everything, and then, what is that experience worth? But absolutely, I for me, it's definitely the lack of an editor or some kind of outside push.
You need somebody to drive you?
I found that if you're working in a team, for me at least, my writer and I are both that for each other.
Yeah.
Which is convenient because she has a marketing degree. And so she's like, we need this and this and this by next week.
Is she here in Calgary as well?
She's here today.
Oh, is she? Okay,
Kate Larking.
Okay, yeah, okay, wonderful. Okay. Well, I'll talk to her later then.
Yeah, so she's very good for holding me accountable and giving me extra deadlines that I would not otherwise have wanted to take on.
Yeah.
And I think I'm good at doing that for her as well, or I'm like, I need the next page because it has to get done.
Well, we have time for, like I said, we have about 4 minutes left, so I guess we have time for about one more thing. So I'm going to ask you one more thing that actually I'm just kind of curious about. Since we're talking about 4 hours sleep at night, and I remember listening to Sylvester Stallone talk about the first time he wrote Rocky, he wrote it all at night, and he said it was really dark, and it was really, like a really mean script, and then they didn't like it, and he rewrote it again during the day when it was bright and outside, and then it came out like it did. Mm-hmm. So is there something, too, do you think, that the night cycles, the creative cycles for you guys, that do you find that where you're at is different at the different times of the day?
I definitely feel... you get that, what they call it, the old crutch of like, I feel inspired to draw right now. I get those at certain times of day. I think the kicker is that inspiration's kind of bullshit. It's about work ethic.
Yeah.
So the time of day shouldn't be a big deal, at least for artists. Anyhow.
Although I would have to say, if you stay up till 4 a.m., your work will suffer. If you've been working for 10 hours straight, take a break, stop, come back to it tomorrow.
Yeah. It's a good idea of doing more things throughout the week and trying to do little bits instead of trying to draw a page in one night, spread out that page.
Which is another argument for work ethic, that if you work for 4 hours a day after your day job or three or whatever
much
you can manage every day, you'll get better work done in the same amount of time as if you just sat down and
talked. And you're not going to spend 4 days out of five feeling guilty that you're not drawing.
Yes.
But think if everyone has, a window, too. And, when you when you have to have another job, like when I had to have other jobs, you just have to produce when you produce.
Yeah.
Right? So you work all day and then you produce, or you try to produce at lunch breaks or whatever. Mm. But if you can, if you have an ideal window, like I do all my layouts between like 7 and 11 in the morning. Mm. That's like the zone. After that, I can render and everything all day.
But yeah, there's certain tasks that are better at different times. It'll take me longer
to do the layouts at other times of the day.
Mm.
But if you have to work around it, you have to work around it.
Yeah.
Right? Like it just,
it's not really an excuse. It's not an excuse not to do it if you don't have your preferred time of day. But
yeah.
I get what you mean.
So anything else you guys want to add to this particular discussion then? Anything else that has popped in for your head for you guys have said, huh, this, now you got to be thinking about this? No?
No. So
no?
We're good?
We're good? All right. Nothing's jumping out. All right, you guys are awesome. I appreciate this. So I'm not sure what you guys will talk about with somebody else or who you'll be with, but good luck topping this. This was nice.
Yeah,
this was
really scary, good. Man. What's happening to us? Where will I go from here?
How will I occupy the rest of my day?
Aggressively, we all defend the role we play. Regrettably, time's come to send you on your way. We've seen it all, bonfires of trust, flash floods of pain. It doesn't really matter, don't you worry, it'll all work out. No, it doesn't even matter, don't you worry, that ain't what it's all about.
We hope you